All right, thanks everybody for coming. Today I'm going to be talking about, well, first I'll introduce myself. I'm Cody Ray Anderson. I work in the Web Communications Unit in the Office of Communications and External Relations. Today I'm going to talk about designing an effective information architecture for your website, or in English, making your website easier to navigate. Basically, I'd like to talk about what I mean when I say information architecture. And then I'll move on to sort of what you should start thinking about when you're planning out your website. Now, that could be you're planning out a new website, you're looking at your website in ways that you could improve it, or completely overhaul it, depending on the sort of scale of the project. That'll include identifying who your audiences are and what their needs are in terms of the website, and then I'll move on to sort of thinking long term and making your architecture sustainable and something that you can keep up over time, and then I'll sort of cap it off with a few other tips to keep in mind. At any point during the talk, please feel free to stop me and put your hands up if you have any questions, or I'm going too fast or too slow, or et cetera, et cetera. We'll also have some time at the end for questions, or you can come up and chat with me. So, as promised, I'm going to start off by defining what I mean when I say sort of information architecture. Some of you maybe are more familiar with calling it like a website architecture or the menu structure of your website. Basically, we're talking about how the pages in your website flow. So you'll have basically pages. I've got a diagram coming up somewhere. Okay, skipping ahead to this is not going to work. How your site is structured generally. Information architecture is a bit more abstract. It's how the information is presented on your website in terms of sort of broad categories. And this is a more sort of generally used term outside of that's independent of the platform you're working with. I'll use the terms more or less interchangeably because we're all working with the WMS Drupal, or I imagine most of us are. But in general, the kind of principles that I'm going to talk about will be, you know, applicable broadly, like I said. Maybe this was the diagram I was looking for. If you're a site manager of a Megill website, it's likely that you've seen this this screen. This is kind of the closest visualization we have for the website architecture, where we have. If you're wondering where this is, I think it's under structure and menu in the Drupal interface. Basically, you'll have. At the furthest left here, your top-level pages. If you have one of the horizontal navigation sites, those will be the ones that appear across the top. If not, they'll just be the ones that show up on the left-hand side when you open up your home page. And then under each one, sort of indented slightly, are the pages that appear under there. So these are kind of the terms in which we're going to think about website architecture and information architecture. Because if you think about it, if you're navigating through the site by clicking on links and clicking through the menu, in terms of visibility, you're only going to see whatever level you're on, and usually every level above that. So if I'm on, I believe this is for the About Megill site, and the first page here is Meet Megill. If I'm on this page, I'm just going to see these pages underneath, but not the ones. I think this is actually the French version of that page, but not on whatever the next heading is. So in terms of when you should think about your site architecture, you should always try to keep it in mind in terms of when you're adding content to the site or maintaining it. But a really important time to think about it is when just before you start building a site or in the planning stages of a major overhaul, as I was talking about before. Generally speaking, it's better to keep your website architecture stable, because the website architecture also determines the addresses for each page. So in this example here, which I clearly should have made a lot bigger, actually, maybe I can fix that. Indulge me for a second. Oops. I think that'll have to do. Hopefully that's a bit better. Where was I? Yes, okay. So in this case, we have Meet McGill here under About McGill. So it would be at something like mcgill.ca/about/meetmcgill. If that section were to move, or if pages under that section were to like move around and get reorganized, anybody who tries to go to mcgill.ca/about/meetmcgill, they're not going to find it. They're going to get a broken link, a page not found error. So that's the reason why we want to keep the architecture relatively stable. The flip side of that is sometimes you need to sort of rethink your site because it's not doing what it needs to do. People aren't able to find the information they're looking for, or it's, as I said, not doing the job it needs to. It's not presenting that information well. Incremental changes, this is sort of the other problem with frequently changing your architecture. These kind of incremental changes can be confusing and frustrating for regular visitors to a site. So if somebody's visiting your site on a daily or weekly basis and, you know, page A is in a completely different place the second time they visit, that could be a problem. I'll cover managing change and minimizing these disruptions later in the session. So when you're in the planning stages of looking at your website architecture, a really helpful first step is to think about who your audiences are for your site. For large sites with multiple audiences, this can be a great way to provide sort of the basis for the first level of the architecture as well. For example, a typical faculty site might have the sections, and Ken's going to give me a scared look when I do this, but this is actually, we made this well before we were working with engineering, is something like About Us, Prospective Students, Current Students, Research, News and Events, Contact Us. Those kind of categories generally would apply to just about any faculty. Depending on what kind of unit you're working in, your audiences are going to be different. Some of you may be only student-focused or only staff-focused, in which case maybe identifying audiences won't give you this kind of top level. But it's still important in terms of how you want to structure your content. So when we're looking at this, we can sort of broadly think about the About Us, News and Events, and Contact Us sections as geared towards all audiences, but specifically towards external people who maybe don't know a lot about the faculty, especially with About Us. Prospective students and current students would be as the name suggests, and the research tab might be oriented towards researchers and industry representatives where appropriate. So this helps both in kind of categorizing the information on your site as well as at the lower level writing to these audiences. So maybe the image you want to project of your faculty or your unit or whatever in the About Us section is going to be pretty, you know, probably going to be pretty kind of glossy, like these are the kind of accomplishments we've done, stuff like that. Whereas content oriented towards current students will probably be more like operational stuff they need to know, exams, deadlines, that kind of thing. That is pretty much what I just said. In terms of how we get to this point where we know about our audiences, it's pretty easy to throw around these kind of high-level ideas of what your users want, and that can be quite helpful. But input and feedback are equally important in working, especially in working out the details. When you're building or revamping your site, or even just in the general operation of your site, if you want to find out like how you're doing, it's a good idea to run a survey or speak to focus groups of students, faculty, or staff who use your site. Obviously, it's a bit more difficult to get people who are unacquainted with whatever you're doing, but that can be helpful as well. And we can help with this. We can help by setting up and running user feedback surveys or just consulting on it, depending on how much control you want to have over it, and helping to interpret the results in terms of being able to make changes. We also have a really cool usability testing tool. It's called Loop 11. We can use this to gather kind of quantitative data about how users navigate your site in a sort of almost real situation. This is sort of what a report would look like. The tests are presented as a series of tasks and questions. A task would basically be you set somebody to start on, you know, your exams page, and you tell them to find, you know, information on deferring an exam, something like that. And then the information gets presented to you, the results get presented to you as whether they were successful in finding this. They failed, they found a page that they thought was the right one, but is not the one you were hoping for. And abandoned, people who just gave up. The tool collects data on whether users can complete the task, as I was saying, how long it takes them, and how they did it, so what kind of pages they went through. This can be really helpful in identifying areas where there's improvement needed. If you're interested, you can get in touch with us at an address that I have not put on this slide, webcoms@mcgill.ca. It'll be in the presentation a bit later. As with just about anything, there's a caveat, though. Input from your users is, like, super helpful, but it's still important to keep in mind best practices. People often have a good idea of what they want, but maybe not how they want it. We found this a lot running user feedback surveys. We've had people suggest just alphabetizing everything on the website, which, if you can tell me what that actually means in practice, I will be very impressed. For example, a lot of people, it kind of sounds like arrogant to say this, but think they want like a flat navigation for their site where every single page is visible at once to get to it. This obviously reduces the number of clicks, and people will for sure be on the right page for whatever they're looking for. But it, in practice, it means that it's a lot more difficult for people who are going through the website to make a decision on what page they want to go to. I've included an excerpt here from a really cool paper called 8 Principles of Information Architecture, which is not by the Da Vinci Code guy, just guy with an unfortunate name. But basically outlining this this point that people think they like having a lot of options, but they really don't. What you really want to do is present them with a few options, one of which gets them closer to where they need to be. What feedback comes back into it in finding out what your users need, and then making sure that that's easy to find, which doesn't just mean, you know, including it in a long list of links, but rather making it something where there's a clear path to get to it. Any questions on that section? I've kind of been barreling straight through. Perfect. Okay. You can also get some of this data from Google Analytics. I imagine some of you are probably already receiving reports. With this tool, it's a little bit more limited in the amount of information it collects compared to Loop 11, because Loop 11 is like opt-in, whereas Google Analytics is kind of passive. But with Google Analytics, you can identify popular pages and find some information on how people are accessing the site. So how many people are using mobile devices, how many people are coming in through search, that kind of thing. If you're not already receiving reports, and you'd like to, or if you'd like to go a bit deeper into the data that you do have, you can get in touch with us at this address, googleanalytics@mcgill.ca, and we can schedule a meeting with you to chat about it. Just another caveat: if any of you are working outside of the WMS, unless you're on a WordPress site on mcgill.ca, we can't actually help you with Google Analytics. It's really only WMS, Drupal, and WordPress. Although if you just, I'm kind of going down a side corridor here, but if you are working with your own site, you can have Google Analytics installed, and we'd still be happy to help you with the data. It would just be not the sort of central service. Okay. When you are planning the site, it's very helpful to visualize it. This was the other visualization I was kind of looking for here. When we build or overhaul a site, we use a template that looks a little bit like this, basically saying this is kind of the architecture that we want to propose, having even more obviously laid out than the menu structure section in Drupal, what pages are going to be on the first level, second level, third, and so on. Visualizing your architecture helps by giving you a bird's eye view of the site. It helps you by showing relationships between pieces of content at a very high level. Other techniques you can use, flowcharts and site maps, anything that sort of helps you get to this point. But it's important to remember that architecture is kind of inherently hierarchical, because you have that, as I was saying before, the third level pages are only going to be visible on the second level page that they're under, and so on and so forth on each level. That means you should organize your content using common sense categories. One helpful method here would be card sorting, which is basically, you would write, say, you know what pages are on your site, write all the names of the pages and what they contain on cards, and then kind of group them into piles, and then try to kind of name these piles and say, like, okay, this is going to be, you know, the getting ready to move to Montreal section or something like that. If you want any more information on these kinds of things, there's a lot of stuff online about it, especially on card sorting. And obviously, if you'd like to get in touch with us, we can help you out with this as well. Now, kind of getting back to the theme of choices, what we're trying to aim for here is to present the user with a few choices where their next step to get to the information they need is obvious. For the top level of navigation, and really this is what we're shooting for just about every level of navigation, somewhere between 6 and 8 items. 7 is kind of a magic number when it comes to... I did a little bit of psychology in my bachelor's degree. It's actually... pretty well documented that people can generally keep like 7 give or take one or two things in mind, it's just kind of a quirk of cognition. So you likely won't be able to cut every level of navigation down to 7 items, and very likely a lot will have fewer than that. But it's a good number to shoot for. There are advantages to having sort of more items under a page, more of these choices, because it means that sort of there are fewer corridors to get lost down, but between 6 and 8 is what we usually aim for. Any questions to that point?
How about fewer items at the top level of navigation? Is that not recommended?
Well, it would depend. The problem with having fewer items is that I'm just trying to make sure I phrase this correctly. So if you have only one or two items, or four, yeah, no, less is less of a problem than more. I'll put it that way. As long as we kind of adhere to the other best practices of making sure that there's like a clear path to where people want to get to. The problem comes in when you try to generalize too much and like the categories are not, you know, don't make a lot of sense to the user. Anything else? I hope that was clear. I'm afraid it was not. So in terms of scaling this up to larger websites, here's another kind of visualization of what a kind of website structure might look like, where these are the top level pages, and then they have items under them, and third level items under those.
Just lost me, Cody.
Yep.
What are the horizontal, like the first item on the left? There's four.
Oh, so one just turned pink. So this would just be the first level. So I'm imagining it like a Drupal WMS site where the navigation items are across the top. Why don't I bring up an example? There we go. So like that. The top, the horizontal line of items would be the pages up here.
If you go back to your
sure.
chart, you have below that.
I need to minimize this. Yes?
No, the previous slide. There we go. And keep going. There we go.
Oh, okay.
In other words, let's say the first two blue on the horizontal bar, and then you've got items...
Oh, I see. Okay.
There's the links between, let's say, those first two. What is that?
Let me bring up the... Probably isn't good if your visualizations actually get things more confused. So these would be the ones that I have going down.
Right.
And then let me try to find one. This isn't very helpful at all. The other ones that were going horizontally, is that... I just meant those for the third level of navigation.
Sorry, I guess I've just been thick-headed.
No worries. If you have the question...
Stories would have children's sites.
Good point. Yes. So these would be the ones that the second one of horizontal pages.
Okay.
So a child and then a grandchild and then.
Exactly.
But they're not considered level. That's okay. They're within the.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But as with any of the pages here, they like this could go down even further with each of these being its own. Parent of children. So the example that I have here is basically if we think from the perspective of the user trying to find some information, which I've say it's on this page that I've highlighted pink. When you first get to the site, assuming you're coming through the home page, you're going to see these the top level items, the ones that I've colored in here. Assuming you're able to select from here the correct one, you'll then see these pages here. And then upon opening up this page, you'll be able to see the ones under that one and get to where you need to go. So this is basically all to demonstrate that to scale up these principles, it's just kind of... you're just trying to use the same ones at every level and making the highest level here the broadest but still intuitive levels of organization on your site, and then narrowing it down as you go through. One caveat that especially applies for large sites is that not everybody would mentally categorize things in the same way. And obviously, we don't want to get users lost. In places where there's ambiguity, it's important to use links in text or blocks to redirect people who might have stumbled onto the wrong page. Say there's a page on exam deferrals, for instance, and it's in sort of a policies and procedures section rather than under exams. Maybe that isn't the best place for it, but it would be important then on the exams page to say, if you need to defer an exam, if you need to click here to go to the exam deferrals page, and then that'll move them to the right place in the architecture. So it's very important to think long and hard about your content, and this is another place where feedback can be really helpful, especially with Loop 11, because you can actually see what pages people are accessing, and if they go down kind of a blind corridor where they get to, you know, a page that's two or three levels deep, and they have no idea where to go from there. Yes?
Yeah, it's off topic, but sure. They change addresses. Like you go on. I mean, I don't know if it's a relevant question.
Well, just we're sort
especially
of
especially McGill. It's like they always change addresses.
Yeah, that's why I added the part in at the start with kind of trying to keep your architecture stable. Do you mean from like a user's perspective?
Users.
Yeah.
User.
Yeah. It's sort of user's choice. You have to, as a site manager, you have to keep in mind that, you know, that is one way people are accessing the site. I'll talk about a bit later, it's increasingly less, I think, important, because a lot more people are, even just in their day-to-day navigation, finding pages through search.
Yeah, I think it's easier, actually, through search.
Yeah.
It's
true, yeah, and frankly, often, Google is more reliable than bookmarking a page. Yes?
I have a thought on that. Sure. Watch out, though, that when you do a search, sometimes you end up with that website that's like 3 years ago, and there have been updates, and it's, oh.
Yeah. Well, as site managers, that's something that's very important to look out for, especially with search kind of becoming more of a like number one stop on people's browsing, to make sure that kind of content is unpublished off of the site, or else clearly labeled as archival content. Yes.
On that note, is there anything that we can do as site managers to increase the likelihood that our most recent site is going to appear first in the search engine?
Right.
Well, not as long as you're adhering to kind of best SEO practices, so making sure that everything, and it's good for the architecture as well, making sure that everything is labeled clearly, when you use links, they point to things that, or rather the link text you use is descriptive rather than, say, like, click here. Instead, say, like, click here for, exam deferral information. I'm going to keep going back to that example. That's really the best thing you can do for that. When there are cases that there's like archival content, if you know that it's going to be archived at some point, it's a really good idea to indicate in the title of the page, if you can, or else very prominently on the page, that this is the 2013 example or the 2014 example. That's really the best you can do, unfortunately. With the McGill search engine, you can also put in requests to have certain pages like bumped to the top of search results I believe it's still with IT. But aside from that, there's not much else you can do. Okay, any other questions? Okay. So when you're putting together, when you're actually in the stage of building the website, but also in the architecture stage, you can identify important landing pages. So that would be any page that has some pages under it, but doesn't necessarily have as much, isn't a source of information in itself. It's more directing people off. So it's directing them off to, you know, services for staff or services for students. Obviously, the biggest landing page on your site is almost always going to be the homepage. It's important to make it clear from how to get from a landing page to the content under it. That means putting links in the content even if they do duplicate what's in the menu, just to make sure that people are finding what they need to. Landing pages are also a great place to just kind of put more like flashy content, especially when it's sort of an outward focused one. So if you wanted to promote, for example, like a research story or something like that, a landing page, if you have a slideshow on there, you could throw it up in there. You can also put up channels blocks. I'll talk a bit about channels later to kind of highlight that kind of thing. For more information on constructing good landing pages, because a lot of this kind of comes down to the lower level bits of web writing and using images and layout well, you can see mcgill.ca/web101. I'll give you guys a second to take that down if you want. That's a pretty recent site that we've put together with some of these best practices, a lot of the stuff that I've covered in previous lunch and learn sessions. Any questions on landing pages? Okay. At the same time, this comes back to what we were talking about with search. You should assume that at least half of your site's visitors are coming through some page other than your home page. You shouldn't, when you're putting your site together, you shouldn't rely on the fact, on the idea that people are, oh, well, they're going to look at the home page and then they're going to kind of narrow down. Some people will use it that way. That's how we try to think about our architecture, to make it easy for those people to find it, because people who find through search, as long as the pages have the information that they need and they're sort of finding the right information, the right pages, they're pretty much good. This holds true for a lot of McGill sites, that at least half of visitors come through some page other than the home page. As I mentioned before, we also work with Google Analytics, so we sort of have data on this. If this is something you're interested in finding out for your own site, it's something we can help out with. So that means you need to remember to include context for users coming in through searches and obvious paths to other parts of the site. So a lot of that's taken care of by the menu structure, because every page has that menu on it. But it's definitely something to think about. Every page on your site is a front door, is the kind of takeaway here. Inevitably, well, most of the time, your site is going to grow unless it's, you know, actually supposed to be a document that's, you know, taking the place of a paper one or something. That means eventually it'll get cluttered and it'll probably need to be revamped again. But if you build your site with the potential to grow in mind, you can kind of minimize the pain of this process. So that means thinking about your sections, especially the top level sections, as ones that are pretty much set in stone. So that's one of the reasons it's good to go for the audience-based approach, because as long as these remain your audiences, and that's probably unlikely to change, you can always find sort of somewhere in the architecture for pages to go. If it's a page that students need to see, then it goes under students. If it's a page for staff, it goes under staff. For content that's frequently updated, such as news and events, it's often suitable for the channels system if you have it on your website. It's in a little bit of a limbo right now because of the Drupal 7 migration. We were actually hoping to do a lunch and learn session on the new channels, but that's kind of been put off for the time being. But anyways, if you have news or events that you'd like to post on your site, it's a good idea to think about putting them into channels, along with the advantages of the news and events items being pushed out to the main channel site and potentially other sites that might want to bring your content in. It also means that they won't appear in your website architecture, and they'll be automatically sort of archived because they have a date and time associated with them. It works differently for news and events. With news will get pushed out of a channels block as more news comes in, whereas events will just automatically disappear as soon as they're over. So as I've written here, it keeps out-of-date content out of the way, but it preserves it for posterity where that's important. Is that all? In terms of the kind of content, it probably comes pretty naturally, but for news, anything like a press release or an announcement that are timely, sort of, being put out at a certain time. And for events, it can be anything from exhibits, workshops, deadlines, just about anything that takes place over a period of time can be put in as an event. Another tip to making, this is important for basically as your site gets updated and grows, as I was saying before, it's great if you can avoid duplication wherever you can. A good architecture shouldn't present the same content in multiple places. It makes it a real pain to keep content up to date. And it can also be confusing for users if there are two versions of the same content. And, you know, you can see one set of regulations on one page and one on another. That can be really problematic. It's almost always better to keep the content in one place and then to link to it where it's relevant. You can sort of alleviate some of the problems with this by working with blocks in Drupal, because blocks allow you to place the same information on multiple pages but keep it updated in one sort of central source location. So rather, if you do have something that really it's a notice, it needs to appear on every, you know, student-oriented page of the site or something like that, what you can do is put it in a Drupal block and then set it to a display on 5 or 10 or 15 pages. And then if you need to update it in the future, if you need to take it down, you only have to do that in one place. Any questions about all that? Cool. Okay. Now, I mentioned that I'd touch briefly on sort of when you actually get to the stage of making these changes, when you've planned everything out, how to go about it in a way that sort of minimizes disruptions to the user. When a live site is undergoing a major change in architecture, it's very important to think about this kind of process. It's best to do it all at once, especially with larger sites. This is another thing that's kind of in limbo with the Drupal 7 migration, but IT is also, for larger sites, will occasionally give staging sites to work on, which basically allows you an offline version of the site to work on. And then take all live at once, and to request redirects, which I will cover in the next slide. When you make these changes, obviously links to your pages will change, the addresses will change, and you'll even find that Google search and definitely the McGill search engine will be a little bit wonky right immediately after. Generally, that's resolved within a couple of days. Redirects, basically, I don't actually have an explanation here, do I? No. Redirects basically mean when you type, when you type in an old address for a page and you have a redirect set up for that old address, people will be immediately taken to the new address. IT can set up redirects for high traffic pages. I think they they generally don't like to do tons and tons at once. But we can help you maximize the effect by picking sort of the top landing pages on the site. So that means the places where people are most coming in through, either from bookmarks or from links on other sites. We can even specifically exclude search, because search is going to kind of resolve itself. You can get in touch with us at googleanalytics@mcgill.ca if you're looking to make changes to your architecture and want to find out sort of how to minimize these kind of disruptions. Yeah.
I don't understand what it means, redirects for high traffic pages.
I think, let me think of a, I'll actually show you a different kind of redirect. This page, so I'm going to mcgill.ca/rapport annual 13. I hope this is the right one. this is one where we actually wanted to put out one URL in a publication and say, you know, go to this for the McGill's annual report, but obviously it was a French publication. And then it immediately changes that to annualreport13/fr. What IT can do is they can also set up redirects when your architecture is going to change, so that if, again, going back to the About site for an example, say this history section was moving under McGill at a glance. You could request them to put in a redirect from this address, which once the page is moved, won't work anymore, to mcgill.ca/about/McGill@a-glance, and then everything else wherever it's located. Does that make sense? Okay. Well, it would be on an address by address basis. I also don't think they can do it if there are currently live pages of that site, that address, so you'd have to take them down first. I think that's doable. Any other questions? Cool. Page aliases form part of the URL to your site. So that's basically for, say you have an about page at your site /about. You can basically manually configure this part of the URL, the last bit, that page, and you can do that at each level of your navigation. When you're redoing a site, it's a good idea to preserve page aliases where you can when things are staying at the same level. So if you have created a whole new About Us page on your site, it's probably not a good idea to change it from /about, because then anybody who has that old address won't find that page unless you set up a redirect. But it's a good idea to change them when they're unclear or not good for SEO for whatever reason. So this is a good example, because /about is very much like a best practice for sites. There'll be like a /about, and there'll be like a /contact or contact us. That's usually where this stuff is found. So if somebody was Googling your unit or whatever of information about this, the search engine would be more likely to present them information that was under here, basically. And it's also very clear to the user when they're searching for it what they're going to find under here. Does that clear? Cool. Okay.
Sorry.
If
the About and the About Us. Mm-hmm. Let's say I did tinker with that.
Sure.
And then I put a child site under /about.
Yes.
Will that pick up the alias?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So it's even more important at the like higher levels to say like I want to try to keep these aliases mostly the same unless they could be like vastly improved kind of thing. As I've been saying throughout the presentation, we're happy to help you. We're part of Communication Services, as I was saying, in the Office of Communications and External Relations, because they wanted to see how many times they could put communications in a sentence. We work closely with IT on many projects, but where they kind of focus on the technical side of the web, setting up websites and helping people use the tools available to them to create the websites, we focus on content, content strategy, that kind of thing. The way we look at it is they teach you how to use the tools, and we try to teach how to use the tools to really communicate what you're all about to use them well. Our unit provides free consultation on website and information architecture. So what I've been saying here, formatting and layout, that was actually the last lunch and learn that I gave. Google Analytics, as I've been saying, usability, accessibility, content strategy, and more. And if we can't help you out, we might be able to sort of refer you to people who can. So if you'd like to get in touch with us at this address, webcoms@mcgill.ca, we'll be happy to get in touch and see how we can help. And we also work in-depth with units to help revamp websites, big and small. I'm not sure. Ken, do I let the cat out of the bag? So the big one, that the most recent one we worked on, is the Faculty of Engineering website, which actually just went live this morning. We're pretty happy with it. And Ken's smiling. And
so. After going through the process, I came here to see what we did.
So yeah, if you'd like to get in touch, we can talk. And we'll be doing more of these, kind of tying them in with our Web 101 site. On May 21st, I'll be doing another Lunch and Learn. Topic is TBA right now. It was originally going to be channels. It's not going to be channels. It'll be something else. But I hope to see some of you there. Yeah?
So you made reference a couple of times to the Drupal 7.
Yeah.
So migration, is there some issue? It's just taking longer than they thought?
I can't speak authoritatively on it because I've really just been sort of in touch with IT about our sites and sites we've been working on with clients. But yeah, from my understanding, there's been a delay. I think it's going to take quite a bit longer than they thought. And I think it might be stretching until the end of the summer or after the summer, rather. But I am not an authoritative source on this. I think they'll be in touch when more sites are going to start migrating over, if that's sort of what your concern is.
Our site was supposed to be migrated.
Migrated, yeah.
I haven't heard anything for a while, so.
I think that the.
It's on hold
now? It's on hold at the moment, but I think they're expecting to communicate with people soon about it. So. Sorry, I don't have more information on that. It's again, it's kind of outside of our area. For resources, we'll post a recording of this presentation up at this very long address. We'll also have it up on the Web 101 site, or rather a link to this. And for anyone who's interested, this is the article. We'll post the slides on the Web 101 site as well. This is the article I was referring to from Dan Brown. It's a good read if you're interested in digging into this a little bit deeper. Any questions? All right, if anybody wants to come up and chat with me afterwards, I'll be sticking around for a few minutes. Thanks, everybody, for coming.